So welcome everybody. This is the weekly Pattern Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices webcast. And today we're going to talk about JavaScript and those the patterns and usage of JavaScript within Office 365, or more specifically in this case, in a SharePoint Online. Well, many of the patterns actually apply to the SharePoint on-premises as well. My name is Vesa Juvonen. With me today here is Patrick Rogers. Patrick, will you do an introduction of yourself?
Sure. Hey, Vesa. I'm a consultant with Microsoft, a member of the Patterns and Practices core team, and spent a lot of time in my career working with JavaScript and various other technologies associated with SharePoint, and recently have seen a big resurgence of JavaScript usage in the community as we transition away from a lot of the server-side SharePoint code into more of the client-side rendering model. And those sorts of capabilities.
Yeah, and that's actually quite often a super scary point. An old school SharePoint server-side developer is getting the message of, oh, I need to now learn a JavaScript. Is that a horrifying learning experience? What's your take on that?
I don't think it's horrifying. I think there's definitely some differences, especially coming from a C-sharp world. But there are some great resources to kind of deal with that. One of them is a project developed in-house at Microsoft called TypeScript, which actually adds some strong typing assistance around JavaScript coding, and is a great way for a C-sharp developer to transition into JavaScript. And that TypeScript actually, quote-unquote, compiles down into just native JavaScript. So it's a great kind of halfway point. And then JavaScript itself, if you've been coding on the server side in any number of languages, you'll pick up without much trouble, I don't think.
Sounds good. There's absolutely, when we are changing the technology, we need to learn new stuff, but that's kind of IT. Things do evolve. And when you think of it, the server-side API of SharePoint really hasn't changed since 2007. So now that we're moving into the new technologies, the new ways of doing implementation within the cloud, I think it's a good practice for everybody to start gradually learning the JavaScript way of doing stuff. At the same time, I have to say, because I'm a classic server-side developer, typically in my case, I do quite often actually still write server-side code, but I do that in provider-hosted application side. But absolutely, JavaScript has a big meaning on the future as well. But anyway, I'll let you, Patrick, go through a few slides, and we do have a really cool demo coming up as well, so I'll let you lead the presentation.
Okay, great. The first slide here is just kind of a quick overview of what we're going to talk about and sort of just where SharePoint is kind of heading. We're getting away from the server-side rendering controls we all know and love and have been using for years. They're great, we just don't anymore have the ability to deploy full trust code. For example, in Office 365, there just is not a mechanism to do that. So we simply don't have access to those controls, which obviously they were very, very powerful. And it brings us to the second point, is that businesses still maintain the need for this custom functionality, the custom UI elements, and things like that that we've spent our time developing and rendering through ASP.NET. Now, really, we've got to start transitioning a lot of that logic over to the client side. And there's lots of different ways to do that, lots of different techniques, and we're going to talk about some of them here today. And just to be clear, we're definitely not exhausting all the possibilities. There's so many JavaScript frameworks out there, so many different approaches. And everyone should explore those and use what they like and what they're most comfortable with. None of what we're talking today should come across as this is the only way to do it. There's many ways to do it, all equally great. So please explore and find the ways that are most comfortable to each developer. Okay, so there's four main places we can start to embed the JavaScript or get JavaScript into our SharePoint sites. The first is through the use of the web user custom actions, and that's something I like to refer to as the loader pattern, and that's something we're going to look at in one of the demos later. The next place is display templates, which applies to views and search and some other places, but the one thing I think is great, Vesa, to touch on here is you don't have to deploy any kind of an app or provider-hosted code at all. It's simply a JavaScript file that can be uploaded to, you know, for example, the style library and used to customize views. And that's something we'll take a look at in the demo as well.
Yeah. On that one, actually, and on the previous point, which is the web user custom action, it's really important to realize, however, that slightly depending on what settings are we configuring, the requirement might be that the app or account, which is setting those JavaScripts to the site, has the sufficient permission. So it might require, for example, the web user custom action collection and accessing that does require a full permissions to the site. Or the web, which means that that particular fellow who's doing that cannot be in the office store. So it's one of these limitations. So it's more around, it's an enterprise development scenario to taking really advantage of these two fellows from that perspective.
Yep, absolutely. And the last two I think are going to be more familiar to folks is SharePoint hosted add-ins. Obviously, it's a JavaScript-only environment, so you can do anything you can do in JavaScript there, use of the JSON to communicate back to the host web or the add-in web. And the one advantage of the SharePoint-hosted add-ins is they give you access to the web proxy. And that web proxy allows you to make some cross-domain calls, fairly simple calls, but can be very powerful to bring in information from external resources. And the final place is, even though provider-hosted add-ins make use of full trust code and or any other technology you'd like, for example, PHP or Node.js, which, again, a great JavaScript on the server side, so it's going everywhere. The provider-hosted add-ins, you can still use JavaScript to enhance UI through Knockout or Angular or, again, you know, making kind of reactive interfaces with JSON back to the site so folks aren't using or reloading pages constantly, kind of that single page application a lot of people are developing these days.
Makes sense, absolutely, Patrick. What's your take, by the way, on now that we're transitioning on the server side implementation using the server side APIs to the client side implementation? There's obviously kind of the impact from a performance perspective. And what I mean with that one is that whenever we implement a classic, let's say a left side navigation, using the server side APIs, you could actually take advantage of a caching. What about within the client side implementation?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think there's a lot of different options and techniques you can use to enhance performance on the client side. Bundling your JS files, using CDNs, as well as client-side caching and, you know, some other areas like that. You know, this might be a great topic for an entirely separate weekly webcast.
Absolutely. And I'll take you on that one. So let's schedule a separate session where we're going to talk about the implementation of client-side caching and because when you implement stuff using JavaScript, you can accidentally cause a massive load on the server side. We've seen some really crazy stuff at some point. So that's a really good topic to cover in a separate session.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll definitely work with you to put that together. And not just the server side, you can also, depending on how you're implementing it, get very sort of what I'll call flaky UI experience for the user, where things are delayed loading and all sorts of stuff. So
absolutely. Good point.
Yeah, that'll be great. And just one more slide here before we get to the demos, just some resources. Real quick, one of my favorite articles is just how to complete basic operations using the JavaScript library. I go to this constantly for just to remind myself, you know, which objects I need to load lists and so forth, because, you know, so many different things to load, you can't remember them all. Then we've got some great stuff on search customizations, as well as examples in the PMP libraries on JavaScript embedding, and then an entire recipe walkthrough on creating a custom field type with client-side rendering and techniques involved there, which is a great PMP guidance for folks to check out. So, and this will be available on the docs.com site for folks to download and click these links, so don't feel you got to type them in.
Yep, and I'll add all of the the links also on the description of the video when we get this one out in the channel 9. So sounds good.
Okay, great. Well, let's go to the demo and actually start to look at some code and see you know, how these techniques can be implemented.
Code, Visual Studio.
This is the part everybody's been waiting for. Everybody would just fast forward the first half of this. So I've got a simple project here, and this is a great project structure I use for testing. And this will be available in the PNP repository at a location to be decided, but will be linked to from this presentation on Channel 9. And the first thing I just wanted to take a quick look at is I like to use a simple little console app to do my test embedding. So in this embedder program, I like to use this to just sort of for my testing. And I want to kind of walk you through a couple pieces here and sort of look at, you know, this is a technique I've used to do a lot of debugging, and I've found it works very well. The first thing you'll notice up here is I've got this URL, which is actually obviously a local host, but that is the URL to my CDN project up here. And the way I've set that up is if I go to the properties of that project and I go to the F4 properties of that project, the first I enable is I enable SSL because all our SharePoint Online sites are SSL enabled, and that just helps us avoid all the little, you know, script loading, you know, errors and whatnot. And then I grab the SSL URL for my local host. And you're going to see me use that in several locations throughout here to target these files so I can debug easily. The next bit here is this is the actual script that's going to be injected or embedded, rather, into the host site using that web or user custom action property. And I want to walk through, this is my little loader script I use very frequently. And it takes an argument here, which could be hard-coded. I've got this broken out just to make it a little easier. But it'll end up being this nice little compact anonymous JavaScript function that gets put into every page. One little gotcha is always remember to, you know, have the semicolon on the end of this, because otherwise it just gets injected inline and it won't play super great with the JavaScript that's already on the page sometimes. So there's a lot of different techniques you can see to do the loading here. What I've done is, since we're loading in the context of the page, I've just used the built-in SharePoint script on demand libraries. Here I construct a URL with you know, a timestamp at the end, so we definitely, our loader file is never going to be cached. And one thing I do for my code, and again, there are many frameworks out there. I use jQuery pretty much every day. So I like to say I want to make sure I load jQuery before I load any of my other stuff, and then I want to load my loader file. So you can see I'm setting up, you know, a register for the script on demand for the jQuery, register the script on demand for my loading file, and then I set up a dependency saying that my loader file is going to depend on my jQuery file, and then I execute a function in the loader. And what that does through the script on demand framework is first load jQuery. Once it confirms that jQuery is loaded, I then load the loader file. One thing you'll see here, there's a function that I don't have any code in, but you could put code in there that will execute once the loader is then loaded. You've seen that pattern before if you've ever used the script on demand framework. I don't typically do stuff here because what I like to keep is this JavaScript I'm injecting, something I would very rarely have to modify, because this is something that's going to be in every page of the site, so I like it to be nice and compact and not have really any business logic or things here that need changed.
One thing, Patrick, on that one, actually, in this case, you like you said, this will be on the every single page of the site, but technically, and that's true in this case, because we are registering this to the user custom action collection in a root web level, but technically, we could actually register in the user custom actions in the site collection level as well, right? So every single site within the site collection would be applied by this user custom action as well.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. And this is, I'm just using the root web because this is for testing, but absolutely, put it in the site collection user custom actions and it'll be broadcast everywhere. So
And the other comment, what I wanted to quickly pinpoint, this the classic challenge of loading these JavaScript files, that's a really great thing that as part of the SharePoint, we have all of these functions, the register functions and creating the dependency, because now that you can really easily make sure that your custom JavaScript is loaded after the jQuery is loaded, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to work with. This is similar to if people really like require.js, or there's so many other module loading frameworks, you could do something with that here as well. But this stuff's already on the page, it's already been loaded, and it works. So I just like to use what's there.
Looks really good. Looks really good. Great pattern.
And so that's it. So this is going to be a very compact little bit of JavaScript. And I'll actually would take out all the line breaks and stuff as well in the string. So you can really minify this if you'd like. And the rest of this is just loading in the user custom action. And I've got a little bit of code here to clear it out so I can just kind of keep rerunning my console app. And you'll see the kind of interesting bit is we just set the script block to that string of script that we want to load, and then the location is script link. And those are the two really key parts of adding this into the user custom action. And you can see the use of the execute query retry there from the PNP core. Great method if you guys aren't using it. It'll ensure that if your requests get throttled, they get retried. But so this does the embedding, and that's great. But let's take a look at the loader file. And so this is a file I really like this approach. We're using the jQuery, get script function, as well as returning a promise, which allows us to do some stuff at the end if we'd like once everything's loaded. And you can see here, I just am loading an array of files that I give it. So I've got some core functions, which in this case are just kind of some example functions. And then I've got what we'll look at in a second is UI modifications. You could have any number of files here. And the real nice thing I like about this pattern is, next month when you come out with UI modifications v2, we don't have to go update all the user custom actions. We can come update this loader file and just change it to UI modifications v2, something like that. And you'll see again here I've used the local host to point to my, local application.
Yeah, on that one, I really want to emphasize the fact that these files are not actually deployed on a SharePoint. They will be actually running within in quotes in the provider hosted application site, even though it's not actually a provider hosted application. It's just a website somewhere in the internet. Well, in this case, it would be probably Microsoft Azure, but it's not really a provider hosted application. It's in quotes the CDN, the clients, the content delivery network, from where we're loading then the JavaScript files, not from SharePoint. Great pattern, by the way, Patrick. Great stuff.
Yeah, thanks. And it's something with a lot of my customers, I will create just an IIS site somewhere for all these kind of static files and let them manage that separately. And it really eases updates and deployments and things like that, from having to imagine running something across 1,000 or 10,000 site collections to make a change. You've now got one place to do all your JavaScript updates and even add new functionality by adding an additional file here to load. No big deal. So core functions is just a collection of just some stuff. But let's look at UI modifications. So what we're doing in here is the first example is just super simple. We've got the jQuery kind of on start syntax, which I think everyone's familiar with. So that's lets us know the entire DOM tree is loaded and we're ready to go. And the one thing we're doing is we want our users to not be able to create new subsites. Got a business requirement to do that. So we just have a little JavaScript line here to grab that link by ID and then hide it. And one thing I think that's interesting is how much the product is realizing that as people take the dependencies on these UI IDs, they're really working towards making them static. Isn't that right, Vesa?
Yes. So as part of the engineering work that we do in Office 365 engineering, we're looking into introducing a standardized set of IDs, which will be guaranteed to be on the page. It's not quite there right now. But as an example, that particular ID, which is the create new site, this ID has remained in the site content since 2007. And it will be there in the future as well. So in the Office 365 engineering, we do know that our customers and partners are making taking a dependency on this particular ID as an example. But at the same time, this is a really important point to realize. So whenever we are using the JavaScript embedding and taking a dependency on the DOM structure of the page, if we would, for example, manipulate, let's say, the suit navigation or the app launcher navigation bar, whenever we release a new version of the app launcher, it might be that your JavaScript isn't actually working that well. So we need to be, let's say, we need to make sure that our JavaScript has a proper exception handling. And then the second part is that we have to have an easy way to update the JavaScript if there are changes which are breaking up the JavaScript because the JavaScript was modifying something, maybe what it should not have been doing. But like I said, as an example, this subsite creation link absolutely will be there, and the ID is currently to be there in the future as well.
Yep, and this loader pattern we just talked about is a great example of how to help, you know, ensure there's one place to change this instead of stuff spread across all your site collections. Yep. So one other thing I wanted to show is if you look in the properties of this project, one of the tricks I like is to set the start URL to the site I've loaded or embedded my JavaScript into. So I can immediately start debugging my JavaScript files by just hitting F5 with that as the startup project. So boom, you can see we've gotten hit. Our file's loaded, great. I'll go back to the page. And you'll see here nothing's happened because, well, there's no new site link on this page. But here, here's our JavaScript code getting hit. We'll just F5 through that, and you can see the new site link is now gone. I did have to do a little shift F5 there. I don't know if anybody caught that. Sometimes the pages get cached with the minimum download strategy. So I'm doing this on a publishing site. You can do your dev on a team site to help with that, or disable it completely, or just hit shift F5.
And technically, well, you can absolutely implement a JavaScript which will work on both sites, right, Patrick?
Yes.
It's just a matter of fine-tuning the functions and making sure that it's executed properly.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, that brings us to the last demo I wanted to talk through today, which is a feature I see not used a lot by people that is very powerful, which are the JS link templates or the JavaScript design templates. It's a super powerful way to customize list views without writing server-side code, which is the way we used to do it, or defining views through the declarative model, right? So you would make those giant XML structures to show your views, and, you know, that's great, but we don't have those options anymore. So,
or you implemented completely a custom web part, which you needed to maintain and test and all of that stuff, just to show the information in one list, right?
Yep, and those would often have big performance implications. I've seen in the past a lot of people would load up, you know, vast amounts of data to take the top five items and show them, or the five most recent, things like that. So
yeah, that's a typical mistake. Loading, it works well in my dev box, right? Because you have only five items, but whenever the list is having 50,000 items and then you're loading it all gradually or whatever, it might have a pretty significant performance hit.
Yeah, absolutely. And these design templates don't require an app or an add-in of any kind, right? We don't have a SharePoint add-in or a provider-hosted add-in associated with them. So I've got this suggestively named list, accordion list here, and we've got some items. And I've got a template here. And what we're doing is a couple of things. The override templates are really just registered with this SP client templates template manager through register template override. And that template override is just a JavaScript object. It's just a bare object. So you can see I'm creating one here just using kind of a real light, you know, JSON structure, JSON syntax that folks are familiar with. These need to match the view, so your base view ID and list template type. For most lists, 1 and 100 work great. One thing I'm going to touch on in a second is part of this template is a method called onPostRender, which is actually an array of functions. There's also an onPreRender, which I don't happen to be using in this template. And then there's another kind of sub-object called templates, and that has a header, an item, and a footer, which interestingly enough render the header, item, and footer. So I'm going to take a look up at just header. And so here's our render header. Now this is a custom method. We could have called this anything we want. But you'll notice it just outputs a string. And that string is going to be written into the page as a literal. It just put right into the page as markup. So you can do anything you want with the markup using this template strategy. If you know, for folks familiar with Bootstrap, this is going to be very familiar, the example for doing an accordion. Coming down to render item, so let me step one step back. So render header will get called once at the beginning, and then for each item in the view, and this is controlled, and we'll show this a little bit later on the page, this is controlled by the view as it's defined in that list view web part. So if you set that to only return 7 items or any of those things, that query and all that logic is taken care of for you, and you're given this context object, which again could have been named anything, but gets passed in, and you're going to have this .currentItem object. And it's got a couple things going on. For one, the ID, and for, again, this is just the accordion markup from the Bootstrap website, but for that we needed some unique IDs. So we've added in, and I've just used the item ID because we know that's going to be unique for both of those. You'll see I'm just building up some more HTML. And then I'm writing out the title field, more HTML, and then this custom field I did called Big Note. And one thing I wanted to point out here is, again, these objects, or this current item object, is defined by the view you've created. So if the field you want to show in your template aren't in the view, they're not available here. So you can really, pare down that view to, I'm only showing 2 fields, I only need to retrieve 2 fields. You're always going to get ID no matter what. So you can really kind of fine tune that query in the list view web part, only get back the fields you need, and that's really going to kind of help out with the performance. But it's also a gotcha, because if you don't include the fields you need in the view, they're not going to be available here. So something to keep in mind. So this gets called once per item, and then we've got render footer. And what I wanted to show here is just we're closing. This is our Bootstrap markup closing. But then we also now, in the footer context, get this is actually available in all the methods, but this is where we're choosing to use it. You could have paging in the header, for example, or you could do logic in the item for each item depending on paging data. But we're also going to write out some paging controls here. So something to look at there. And the last bit I want to talk about is this post render callback. And this is exactly what it says. It's a callback function. You can have multiple of these. Again, the property is an array down here in the object. Let me actually make this a little bit bigger. So this post render callback. So as an example, I've again used the script on demand framework. And this could be, again, you could do stuff with require.js, whatever you'd like here. Lots of different techniques, but I like to use what's already there. So I'm loading Bootstrap, again, from a CDN, and then I've got this little utility to grab the Bootstrap CSS and add it into the page as well. This, and we're not doing right now any other custom JavaScript, but this is a callback, so you could do any other manipulations you wanted. You can grab, at this point, these items will be in the DOM, so you could use jQuery to grab and manipulate the markup you've just rendered. One thing to keep in mind, you should not use jQuery at these points, right? Because this stuff won't yet be in the DOM, so you're not going to find it. You're going to have weird errors and things like that. So let everything render, and in the post-render callback, go ahead and do what you need to do. In the pre-render, that would be a place you could make other calls to systems to get some information you need to help render your views that you need ahead of time. But keep performance in mind, right, at all times. So if you know you make calls to external systems, that's going to slow the rendering of your view. So the last bit is just what I've done is I've just put that JS file we just looked at here in the style library in a folder called examples, and I've updated our dev site homepage to have a list view web part, and it just has on it. Oh no, the things are no longer accordion. So we'll look at the paging one, and you can see just the bootstrap accordion stuff running. And this is the example I had with the paging controls.
And on this one, Patrick, right? This is a content editor. This is a list view web part.
This is just a list view web part, and that's what I was going to show. This final thing to just kind of round this out is we just edit this web part. You can see it's just a list view, so I just inserted the app or add-in part for the accordion list. And so this is where you can edit the current view, and this is what I was talking about. We won't go ahead and stay on this page. So we won't go ahead and do that now, but this is where you'd make sure the fields and everything were in your view, adjust your query, you know, things like that. All these options apply, so we've done no toolbar. You can change the title. I've done no Chrome, all these sorts of things. And the last bit here is this JS link. We've just put a link to our design template here. And a couple things to note is that the tilde site collection token is respected. So that's understood here. And so we can put our design template in just like that. So we haven't deployed any server-side code anywhere. We haven't had to register an add-in anywhere. We've just put that one JavaScript file up, and it's gone ahead and modified our UI here for us. So we can hit save.
On that one, actually, Patrick, it's really important that I think people understand what we're doing here is that we are using the remote provisioning pattern in the embedder to push the JavaScript files to the right location, or just as well, we could do that manually. Well, if it's a hundreds of thousands of site collection, that's not probably feasible. From a demo perspective, it's just drag and dropping a JavaScript to the right location and then pointing and configuring the individual UIs. But couldn't we configure this web part automatically as well? Would that be something to be done?
Yeah, so if folks are using the provisioning engine out of PnP or doing their own site provisioning through CSOM, you can configure these web parts at provisioning time, for example, and add them into the home page or whichever page you might like. And that's another great approach, you know, to get this stuff onto the pages. And so that's really kind of closes out what we were going to talk about in terms of the demos. And I don't know, Vesa, if you had any other questions or wanted to go back over any of those things, but a lot of really powerful stuff can be done now through just, you know, the JavaScript and these various ways to embed, you know, that code into the product.
Absolutely, absolutely. Really, really powerful stuff. One of the questions what we quite often get when we start showing the advanced JavaScript implementations is that could you actually have a JavaScript which is running, or you associate that running in the web user custom actions, which is then calling a web service outside of the SharePoint? Would that be something what we can do as well?
Certainly. There's a couple techniques. If you had the availability of a SharePoint app, you could use the web proxy. Or if you can set up the core's settings on that remote server, for example, if you control it or certain features in Azure, you can set those up, storage being one of the examples. You could make those remote calls straight from the client page as well and load in data. It's good to, again, keep in mind there's going to be some latency, so kind of have that, have a little spinner or some kind of a loading icon to let your users know, you know, the content's on its way. But that's another great usage of the JavaScript.
Yeah, because then you're able to actually access the server-side APIs within the C#, and then within the C#, for example, in Microsoft Azure, you have full access rights on whatever, well, full opportunities of doing whatever the Microsoft Azure is providing you. So that's really a great pattern to to get access on additional capabilities, which might not be in a JavaScript side as well. And on that one, I probably will follow up on having a separate session with Patrick on the web API calls from JavaScript, because I think that's a really super pattern in the future as well.
Yeah, but definitely. I think it's a great way, too, to build those kind of single-page applications we've talked about. Like you mentioned, leveraging the full power of Azure and creating a lightweight, you know, facade for your code to call that then goes and brings in whatever you need, you know, from storage or machine learning or, you know, SQL, any of the other Azure systems that are available. It's great stuff. Great stuff. A lot of possibilities.
Yeah. And just to let's close up the meeting. We can chat about these things for ages, obviously. But obviously, one of the key points what we showed today was the fact that you don't necessarily need to apply or deploy or add or even create a SharePoint add-in. You can absolutely take advantage of adding the right files to the right location and configure the stuff automatically. But then if you want to automate of adding those items to the right location, you would be running C-sharp, C some code typically, or REST APIs to push the files to the right locations. And which is the right thing to do with the remote provisioning. The sandbox solution model in a SharePoint Online, that's going to be, well, it's not as efficient, and it has its own downsides, which we won't go into within this webcast, which would be a really great webcast, by the way, to do as well. But really, Patrick, thank you for your time, and thank you for joining me. A great session, great demo, and I think people are learning new stuff based on this recording.
Yeah, I hope so. Thanks, Mesa. Appreciate it.
Thank you.